welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv.
Okay, well, as promised, I've got my very special guest here. We've been at the I Love Real Estate Super Conference here in Brisbane, and I've dragged him away out of the room to talk to everybody here on the podcast. So now my very special guest today is Tyron Hyde. Now, he's somebody who can really maximise your tax deductions. He can get out there and really turn something that might have been a negative cash flow property, and you all know how I feel about that, into something that could actually be a positive cash flow property. He's a man you definitely need to know. Now, he's got a little bit of a interesting background, let's say. He went to work straight out of uni and got involved with this company for a bit further down the track, and he loved it so much, he actually went out and bought the company. Can you believe it? It sounds like one of those, what is it, the Remington
ad? I think, didn't I? That's right. I bought the company. I loved it so much.
Washington Brown. So just tell me, Tyron, what do you actually do?
Well, my profession is a quantity surveyor. And in summary, we work out what things cost to build. The company's been going for about 30 years, and I started there as a cadet 22 years ago. And I wrote a thesis on the effects of property depreciation on residential investment property.
You're an exciting man.
Well, I've got to tell you, it wasn't the best pickup line as a 24-year-old. But, you know, once every 7 years, when the property market goes up, people are interested in what I've got to say.
So I guess you fared okay with the pickup line eventually. Then,
yeah, mate. Eventually. So,
well, that's why you had to buy the company, right?
Well, in reality, luckily I met my wife when I was 17, so she's known me for that long. True story. So, but in terms of depreciation, we help a lot of property investors maximise their tax returns in regard to property investment.
Okay. So let's get into that in a little bit more detail. First of all, quantity surveying.
Yes.
Really, as an industry, it really didn't come into play until, say, the 18th of July 1985, when depreciation came into legislation.
That's true. I think the actual industry itself has been around since the 18th century. But generally, the old school quantity surveyors, they were purely involved in measuring and counting bricks
For
the purpose of working out what the construction costs were for a builder.
Right.
So the traditional quantity surveyor in the old days would measure...
An estimator
would literally work out how many bricks are going to the project, how many nails, how many bolts. They got down to that much detail. And it wasn't the most exciting profession you could imagine. But luckily for me, I think what we do as quantity surveyors now is involved in the depreciation side. It gives another spin to what we do. And it's probably the side now that is more the recognisable in terms of publicity and so forth. What you're referring to is no one would have known what a quantity surveyor was these days in the property investment industry unless this ruling came out in 1992 that said quantity surveyors are the best people to work out the construction costs where the costs are unknown. True story. That's right. I still would say that most people don't know what a quantity surveyor is because every time I have to lie sometimes, Fitna, and say that I'm a valuer because people understand that a lot more than what a quantity surveyor is. So I say, look, I'm a valuer, but I'm a valuer of what things cost to build, not buy.
Right. Well, I'm a little bit older than you.
You don't look it.
When I first got out of uni doing accounting and all that kind of stuff, dealing with private clients and things, you know, depreciation came into play on the 18th of July 1985.
That's right.
And suddenly we could claim a tax deduction for the carpets and the curtains and all of these things. We could claim a tax deduction for the actual structure of the building.
That's right.
And it's changed in rates and things over the first couple of years. And after 1987, it kind of settled down a little bit to 2.5% for the structure.
Yep.
But in those early days, I remember them very, very well. You'd have a client come in to do their taxes and bits and pieces, and they've got a rental property, and they'll go, we're trying to work out a depreciation schedule, and we go, well, the carpet, it's about $3,000, wasn't it? Yeah, it was about $3,000. Yeah, we'll write down $3,000. And the hot water system, oh, that was around about $800, wasn't it? Yeah, we'll put in $800 for that. Yeah. So it was really much just, you know.
Do I guess if I got? It's funny you say that, because how I actually got into this area was my accountant said to me, because we weren't doing this at the time, this is a long time ago, obviously, we weren't doing it at the time, and he said to me, Tyron, I've got a client, and I normally do this, but it's a bit of a bigger property. Can you, you're a quantity surveyor, I think you might be better at doing this, right? Truth. And so I went out to the property, came back, and I put on something like, well, there was one lift, I said about $100,000. He goes, $100,000? He goes, for something like that, I would put $600,000. Which is hence why I think the ATO got, in 1997, said, well, hang on, we actually think we need some people that actually know a bit about construction costs to do this, not counters, no offence. Yeah, so we do go out to the property, unlike accountants. We, as I said in the talk then, we go out to the property and we actually measure how many square metres of the carpet, so we can justify what price we put on items. So we don't, and we take pictures, and we can, when after we've done a depreciation report for our clients, if they said to us, show us what you've done, I can give them a full Excel spreadsheet of how many square metres of carpet, how many square metres of blinds, how many light fittings, what type of light fittings, what type of oven, etc. And so we can then say, in case they get ordered in 5 years' time, how did you get to those numbers? Well, here they are. Yeah. This is what we've done.
So, you know, it must be very gratifying to you to basically have your whole industry and your job and your career and your business and everything legislated, because we have to have you.
I feel blessed in some ways, didn't I? It's funny that you say that, because I've seen because I've been doing this for so long, I've seen so much change in the ATO has tinkered with what is and what's not depreciable so often, and finally they hit the nail on the head and said, this is what you'll do. Because what they were doing for many years was every quantity surveyor had a different view on what was considered plant and equipment and what was considered part of the building. So every quantity surveyor, including myself, would err on the side of the client. So everyone would say, oh, kitchens are part, because there was no specific legislation as what wasn't and what was. So we would say, yeah, we think kitchens are plant and equipment. Let's claim that over 5 years, not the 40 years. The ATO saw all these different reports, all these differing opinions, and finally put out a ruling saying, this is what you will and won't do, what you can do and what you can't do. In my view, they've erred on the side of too much caution. Mm-hmm. Now, didn't they say to us property investors that the kitchen is going to last 40 years from the time you bought, if it was brand new. Now, I say, my kitchen lasts for 40 years, my marriage won't. And they also say that that downlights are going to last 40 years. I change them every year.
Yeah, that's true.
So this is whilst they've had this ruling and you have to abide by it, doesn't mean I agree with it as well.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Mm. But I mean, the tax office really has put out all this rhetoric on this is how things have to be done. Mm. But then, as time goes by, you know, the light fitting, the downlight, it blows, and you've got to replace it.
Yes.
So the new cost comes in.
Yes.
It's
replaced. But this is the issue. This is the issue that I'm referring to. And I think that by going so cautious, there's going to be millions upon millions upon millions of dollars not claimed.
Agreed.
Why? Because the kitchen that is only 20 years old, the taxpayer or the property investor doesn't know what the residual value on that kitchen is, right? Because as a quantity surveyor, we don't give you a list of every brick that goes into the report. We say, here's the $200,000 construction cost, of which $20,000 is ovens, dishwashers, etc. So your kitchen component is in the brickwork, mixed up with all the bricks and the gyprock and the windows, right? So when in 20 years' time, that kitchen that the ATO said is going to last 40 years doesn't, because taste, the ruling never took into account taste or never give you any option to taste, right? Because taste change. It might structurally last, trends change, and you want to keep with the time.
I want a granite benchtop, not a laminate.
That's right. Exactly, because I want to get a tenant.
Yes.
So when you do replace that 20-year-old kitchen, you as a property investor don't know what is left unclaimed on that kitchen.
Yep.
So you rip it out. No one, you put in a new one. Yes, you claim the cost of the new one, but people aren't claiming what's left to go on that one. So the tip here is to get Washington Brown out before you pull it out. Absolutely. And we'll put a value on it and say, well, we think it cost $10,000 20 years ago. There's $5,000 left to go.
So in that year when you replace your kitchen, you not only get the depreciation on the new kitchen, which might be a $10,000 kitchen.
Yep.
You get the $5,000 from...
Left unclaimed.
Three owners ago that put
Absolutely
it in.
Absolutely right.
That is really cool.
Absolutely right.
That is a major thing that investors need to know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've written articles on this saying, in my view, that they have gone too conservative. But that's all, like the things that we're now considering going to last 40 years are shower screens. I've had a lot of investment properties in my life. Shower screens have never lasted me 40 years.
No.
What else? Well, kitchen cupboards, vanities, mm-hmm. Again, similar like kitchens. Downlights, as I said, certain lights. So, you know, there's lots of things.
What's
in a unit.
These days?
Carpet's about 10 years.
Okay. It depends. That's pushing it
10 years, but in commercial, 8. Yeah. But at least with carpet and some items, you can make a determination on what you think it will last. For instance, Macca's will say, well, our ovens are only going to last 1 year because we use them every minute to pump out hamburgers, Big Macs, those things. but with brickwork and concrete, you have no right to make a determination of how long you think it's going to last.
Mm.
You have to use the 40-year rule.
So we talked about kitchens there before. Does the same thing apply for, like, say, a sleepout? You know, it's part of the building and it got knocked down and a two-bedroom extension got put there in the place. Would the same apply to that piece of building that got knocked down?
Sleepouts, what? So you mean like granny flat?
Sorry, it's a Queensland.
Right. I'm from Sydney.
A sleepout. It's an enclosed part of the building.
Okay. So it would be part 40 years, it provided with structural improvement, that would be considered a structural improvement.
So
okay.
We'll get that on the new bit that we've put on, but we could actually claim it on the bit that we've pulled out.
Yes, yes.
So we need you out there twice.
Yes. And pay me only 1.5 times because I'd give you a discount because I went twice.
Oh, there you go. So get you out before we do any major construction or remodeling renovation of any description, because that crystallises the depreciation of the bit we're going to pull out or renew.
Provided that, according to the recent ruling, that it has been used as an income-producing asset before.
We're talking about investment properties, absolutely.
Yes, so you can't just buy a property, renovate it, and claim any residual values.
No, this is a property that we've bought and we've got rented out and now we go, right, kick out the
tenants. Pretty common.
It's
pretty common.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to extend it, we're going to do this, we're going to do whatever. So we get you in before we do anything.
Yep.
When we buy the property in the first place is when we get you in.
Yes,
really.
That's right, yes.
Then we get you back in after we've done the remodel and you go, you know, here's the new schedules for the next period of time coming.
That's right.
Yep. Okay. So what happens when you buy a property off another investor and they've already had a quantity surveyor come out and do it? Can we use their quantity surveying report?
Very good question. You're an accountant, aren't you?
I am.
Okay. I would say, well, firstly, what happens is, that's what's supposed to happen. The law was such that there is, and very few people know this, that the transfer of information is supposed to go from when a developer builds a property...
Yep.
He's supposed to give that out to the purchaser,
correct?
The building allowance component, right? He then supposed every time there's a transaction, you're supposed to hand
pass
that
it
pass it on. It never happens. It happens a lot in big commercial transactions because Westfields will want to argue that I'm paying XYZ for I'm selling my air conditioning for $4 million, and you're buying it for $3 million
because they don't want to make a profit on the sale.
That's right. So, but in residential, it doesn't happen.
No.
But if it did happen, so if you were offered that. If it became part of the contract, well, then you've really got no sight. If I, as an investor, put into the sales contract that here's the original report from the developer, there's the actual building cost, and I put into the sales contract that my written down values for that oven are $500, well, you really don't have any. That's what you're paying for that
true.
Item, right?
Which
however,
hardly ever happens.
I don't think I've ever seen it in residential.
Yeah.
But
I've seen a few contracts where they say that the fixtures and fittings are being sold at written down value, and here's the quantity surveyor's report that I got 10 years ago.
Yes.
In accordance with
if it's in the contract, well, then you're limited. If it's not in the contract, then I would argue that you would work out what you've paid for those items based upon the purchase price of the property.
Mm-hmm.
So
effectively, the tax office then is missing out on, if that's the case, and we get you back in after we've bought the place.
Remember,
and you go, the oven, you know, it's written down value is $500, but when you come in, you go, well, the depreciated value of it's $800.
Yeah.
Effectively, the tax office is missing out on the sale of the fixed asset to the seller of $300. The
profit could do. That's right. I could do.
They're going to jump on that loophole all
over
the place.
The argument there is that the purchase price has gone up. Who are we to argue what the purchase price is? If I see that computer there, Dipner,
mm-hmm.
if you bought it for $2,000 today, right?
Yep.
You've depreciated down to $1,000.
Yep.
You put it on eBay, mm-hmm. and I pay $1,500 for it.
Yep,
what's my opening written down value?
Yours is $1,500.
Correct.
But I've made a profit on sale of $500.
Exactly. But that's right. So I'm starting at $1,500 because that's what I paid in the fair market value.
Yep.
And that's all. We represent the buyer. That's what we do. The $500 miss is, well, I guess the problem with that is the actual.
If it was the computer, then the tax office would be. I would have to declare it because it's an item that I use for my business and da da da. And therefore, any gain that I make on it, I'd have to declare, and that's income. But when it's on a house. And it's all mixed up into the melting pot of
that's
whatever
right, exactly.
it is.
Exactly.
The tax office is actually missing out.
Well, they could be, but they're also getting, because that will only ever occur where the property prices have gone up. So in other ways, they're getting higher taxes elsewhere, and they want the stamp duties, etc. From that's a state government as opposed to federal.
Sure.
That's right. So it does get. I guess the issue there is the trends. Try to work
I'm
it out.
In favour of
I don't
tax
know
either.
I don't know. No. But this is the fact
it's
of
true.
Life. It's
yeah.
the fact of life. So the issue there though is how would one ever work that out? Because then you look at different. Tax returns, and it's a nightmare. So
I'm sure they'll legislate against it, but anyway.
They have. So if the building, they already have, because the building allowance, you have no right to put in the value of what the construction costs are. We're only talking about the oven fixtures, right?
Yeah.
Which in a $400,000 purchase price, you're talking 5%, right? So it's not in the big picture whether. It goes into the report at 5% or 6% in the overall big scheme. They probably said it's too hard. The transactional trying to work that out is more of an organisational nightmare than what the difference they're losing there is.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that's only assumed that the Quantity Surveyor does get involved. Like, it doesn't happen always. And we don't know what someone has sold down on that. We don't know. So we go out there, we say, well, based on your purchase price, we think you paid $1,000 for your
own. Yeah. Occasionally, if you're buying off an investor, another investor, you'll say to them, did you get a Quantity Surveyor's report and can I have a copy of it? Because then you can kind of pick up and carry on from there if you choose to. But most of the time, well, a lot of the time, you'll have a mum and dad who live in the house
that's
and
right.
own an occupier
exactly.
somewhere
that's where
in the mix.
That's where it even gets more confusing. That's
and then
right.
everything gets lost.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And if I was selling to an owner-occupier, they don't care about what depreciation I've claimed, so they don't ask. They don't care.
Yeah.
So that's where that's right.
So
and if the legislation is such that which it is now that once a brand new unit is sold and then transferred, once that owner occupier comes in and buys, they don't care. They don't ask for it,
no.
And the lawyer doesn't care. It's just more of a paper nightmare for them to ask what the original construction was back four purchases ago, which you have no interest in because you're an owner occupier.
That's right.
Never going to happen.
No. Never gonna happen. The other thing that I see quite often with investors is, you know, they buy an old place. You know, some of the old Sydney places in Melbourne, that kind of stuff, where they're really, you know, they're quite older properties, all the major capital cities for that matter. And, you know, it might have been built back in the 1950s, before depreciation and everything else came into play. And then they say, oh, well, it's not worthwhile me getting a Quantity Surveyor in because I can't claim any depreciation anyway.
Yeah.
Which is actually a load of rubbish because I can tell you now, if a property hasn't had some kind of renovation, kitchen remodel, bathroom
Correct.
Remodel, extension, carport, something put on since 1985...
You're not going to get a tenant.
Well, you probably won't get a tenant. So, you know, it's worthwhile doing because of those costs. That
exactly,
are
that's right. And also, that also applies to strata property because invariably a strata property would have, every 10 years, would have the foyer remodeled.
True.
Repainted,
that,
all that stuff as well.
Yeah.
So we also look at those things as well.
Or the lift,
the
fixed.
The lift, or fixed, that's right.
Yeah.
But even when as an investor in a strata title building, you own a portion of that lift when you buy that.
That's right. It's interesting when you start looking at strata title buildings and things like that, units basically we're talking about now, with there's a lot of items, and I guess it's the same for residential as well, there's a lot of items that you can claim 100% in the first year.
Yes.
Let's expand on that a little bit. What kind of items are we talking about?
Okay, well, firstly, items that are 100% are items that cost under $300, okay? And in strata title properties, it's your portion of that is what's relevant. So I'll give you an example. I drive into my garage every day at my office and there's a big roller door there, right? The roller door itself is part of the building, but the motor that opens and closes that roller door, it might have cost $2,000 or it's worth $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
There's, say, 50 units in our strata suite. So I've bought roughly $80 off the top of my head. Was that right? Something, $100, whatever, a number. I should have given some easy numbers. So $2,000 divided by 50, you know, $60. I've just paid $60 for my portion of that $2,000 auto motor. Mm-hmm. So I can claim that because my portion is under $300. I got an immediate write-off on that.
Yep.
That's one. Then
that's
you got
one way of doing
that's
it.
One, that's some. That's
and
one of the things.
Other things only expected to have an expected life of a year.
That's right. There are some things that have an expected life of 1 year as well. Yep. So there's things that cost under $300, and there's things that you have a really low effective life.
Now, with the last budget in May, one of the things that they were talking about, I don't think it's actually gone through legislation yet, but was changing the $300 for small business up to $6,500.
Yes, that's right.
So
something else, was it $5,000, I think, was it?
No, $6,500.
Was it? Okay, all right.
Or maybe $6,200, six something anyway.
Okay.
So, you know, how's that going to affect things?
Things like that. Okay, well, that depends on your... This is more of an accounting issue, but I guess... Because we really are quantitative, we give numbers, right? And we do... Over time, people have expected us to know all far more parts of the Act than I would... I say that quantity surveyors were originally supposed to know, but by the forces of nature, we have to know all this stuff. And some accountants, I would argue, also would say, you just should give us the numbers. We'll let us know how we treat that item, because it's true in some ways, because we don't know whether you're a small business, whether you, what
right,
entity,
what classification
you are. So if we're putting a rate on something, and we don't know your tax treatment.
Yeah.
How can we put a rate on it? Because that's where it comes down to, depending upon whether you're a small business, medium sized business, all that now governs what rate you'll be claiming. So I think a lot of accountants, I know, they just get our numbers and then they have to treat it into their own, that entity's
situation.
Yep. How will it affect a lot of property investors? Well, it won't, because most property investors would be, I assume, a lot of them are PAYG earners, but I guess it would affect if you're doing a fit-out. And like when the government bonuses came into play, that affected. So if you're doing fit-out for a small business, that definitely will affect you. So fit out is more the only way I would see that kind of rule that those allowances will benefit our clientele.
Certainly makes it beneficial for write-offs.
Well, I was just had a meeting the other day with the doctor, and she said the only reason she did this fit out was because of the bonuses that she did.
Yeah,
that's right.
Qualified.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, so something else that I notice a lot is when I was in the accounts practice, obviously I don't practice anymore. When I was in the accountancy practice, something I saw a lot is a huge variation between quantity surveyors' reports. Some literally are two pages long that they don't visit the property, and they're not worth the paper they're written on, and the tax office doesn't like them. What they're actually doing, the tax office is saying they're targeting investors who use these quantity surveying reports that, seriously, they're two pages long. They haven't gone out and had a look at the property, and they're not worth the paper they're written on. So they're asking for an audit.
Don't start me, Dipner. I think this is unacceptable. The funny thing about this is that a couple of years ago, I'm a member of, associate member of the Australian Institute of Quantity Surveyors, and 2 years ago I saw this coming, and the Tax Agent Practitioners Board put out a... We have to be part of it now. So we have to go through the hoops to become a TPG registered person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a registered person, my company is. But the surprising thing is they let some of these companies in to play. My argument would be not that A, the reports are not of the best quality, but B, I would argue day in and day out that the $200 that you're going to save by using someone like that is going to be the most expensive $200 you
save
day in, day out.
Agreed.
We come back and we see what... We get them all the time from clients that have used this, and we get so much more. I don't know, but people... Look, you can only draw a horse to water sometimes. Is that the same?
No,
so my argument would be that whilst the reports aren't even that good, and I think it's going to blow up in their face... You're going to lose in the long run by the deductions, not just that the report, in my view, when it's audited in 2 years' time and the client and they haven't even been in the property, will become null and void. You're going to lose out lower deductions.
A lot of the industry, particularly the real estate sales industry, uses you guys as a tool to sell a property.
Absolutely.
Primarily for negative gearing.
Yes.
Something I, am vehemently against.
Yes.
And but even though that's how you guys are used and in effect perhaps labelled in that kind of field, the fact is you go out there to invest in a property because it makes money, not to lose money like negative gearing, but you go out there to buy a property and it makes a profit. But you still, with that profit, do your very best to minimise the amount of tax that you have to pay on it. And that's where, you know, getting the quantity surveyors in to go in and have a look at exactly what's there and what the maximum tax deduction is, it reduces that ultimate tax bill. It's still a good thing.
I always tell people to buy property based upon many other variables other than depreciation. Depreciation is definitely the icing on the cake. Once you've bought the property that you have...
Buy it for profit first.
Buy it for profit. Buy it to start making money. Then come to us and let us maximise the depreciation.
Agreed.
Rate. Let me tell you an example. We do a lot of work for a major developer.
Yep.
And they had in their development site, the five different development sites,
yep,
they have a display
yep,
display.
Mm-hmm.
And in each display unit, they had a Washington & Brown marketing depreciation report that says, if you buy this unit for $500,000, you only get a $15,000 depreciation claim. She drove around to the other one, said it was $500,000, and the year one depreciation claim was $16,000. She kept driving around to the five. She rang me up, said, Tyrone, I've been to this site, and it was $500,000, and the year one was $15,000. The next one was $500,000 purchase price, and the $16,000, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, so that makes the one that had the $500,000 purchase price and an $18,000 year one investment, that was the best investment, wasn't it? And I said, no, the best, it doesn't work like that.
No, not at all.
The best investment was the one that said I get the highest capital growth or even make you money.
That's it. Make your money first.
Make your money first.
Yeah.
And then worry about depreciation.
Yeah. Something else that is a different slant on quantity surveying and a very, very useful tool for the more experienced investor particularly is using a quantity surveyor to work out the cost of construction on a property where you're buying the property below construction costs. Because right now, those opportunities are out there. So you're actually buying the property below replacement costs, well below in a lot of cases, and you're immediately getting a benefit, you're immediately getting a tax deduction. And people don't use you for that purpose, but I tell you what, they should.
Did you just watch me speak?
I might have heard you a few times.
So I just spoke, and in my talk I said that I've never seen a time where I've seen more clients buying property at close to the construction costs as I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So as I said, it doesn't make it a good investment, but I'll tell you what, it gives it a bit of a base.
Yeah.
You know, I know where I'd rather buy in some of these places that I'm seeing. I'd rather be buying at this point of the cycle than the other point of the cycle. And you just, as part of my job is to review what the sales history on projects were and then analyse the sales history versus the construction costs. And I always think that if I can buy property at close to the original construction cost, then it's hard to lose money because there's a natural flaw there. Because I don't know about you, Dimna, but
construction costs go up.
Up. And I don't know about you, but when was the last time an electrician came to you and said, Dimna, I'm going to charge you less this year than I did last year?
No. Does not happen. Well, very unusual if it happens, yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, so, you know, we're obviously in a great cycle to be buying property and buying property at the bottom of the cycle and all of that kind of stuff right now. But I really do want to emphasise to all of the listeners that getting a quantity surveyor's report done on even a prospective purchase is a good idea, not just for the depreciation, but also to identify the real value in your purchase itself, particularly on the bigger properties. It's something I always do, you know, commercial properties and the bigger stuff, so that you've got a real concept of the per unit cost of whatever it is that you're actually buying. And when you're buying in at less than replacement cost per square metre, well, as you say, you really can't go wrong
from a
growth perspective.
Look, if you're buying property and the construction costs are 30% of the purchase price, there is a variable. It's either got a great view, but there is a variable there that can go wrong. And this is what happens with, I guess, with the luxury houses. What is the market that's gone down the most? Would be the luxury houses in Vaucluse and so forth, right?
Luxury houses and units.
And units in, as a ratio.
Gold
yes.
Coast
so, yeah, that's right.
Luxury items.
That's right. But there, if you analyse what the purchase price was, say, 5 years ago on that house in Vaucluse versus the construction costs. So say the purchase price was, say, $2 million, the house was $500,000,
mm-hmm,
and the land was $1.5 million.
Yep.
If I could, which I wouldn't be able to do, but if I was to buy that house today for $500K, tell you what, I'd have a far greater chance of making money in the future than having that big
land for free.
We've got the land for free, and that's what I'm saying. And now it's not going to happen in Vaucluse, I can give you a tip, but there are areas in the country where I'm seeing it.
Yeah. Well,
and then some others say you've got to factor in growth, etc. But you know what? Some of these areas, they really do fluctuate in their purchase prices.
Yeah.
It is a, and if you can buy at that point of the cycle, then you know they also do fluctuate up as they can fluctuate down.
Yeah, that's right. Oh well, we're certainly buying at the bottom of the cycle right now in most places
around Australia. Most.
Some places are in a bloodbath, which is great, but there's other places that are going gangbusters too.
Yeah, that's right. I'd say that's right.
Yeah. You know, your industry as a whole and what you do at the bigger end of the scale. Because obviously a lot of my listeners are investors, they're getting out there, they might be doing a little bit of development here and there and things like that. But we understand the retail end of your business. What else do you do?
Well, we also do traditional quantity surveying. So if you're a developer and you're building 100 units, the bank just doesn't give you $100 million and says, here you go, go and build those units. The bank will want to come to someone like me on a panel of a bank and they will say, can you give us an independent cost of what the construction are?
Yep.
So we get the plans and we get our scale rules out and we work out how many square metres of bricks are going to be laid, how many cubic metres of concrete are going to be poured and how many windows, square metres of windows are going to be put in, etc., etc. And then we say to the bank, well, invariably, it's going to actually cost not $100 million, the developer told you, it's probably going to cost $110 million because the developers... No, I'm generalising it, but generally it helps a developer if the construction costs are a bit tighter and the values are higher because he gets funding.
Yeah.
Once that's all sorted out and we've all agreed it's 105, then every month we go out or whenever they need money, we'll get asked by the developer to come out, we need to do a progress claim. So we go out to the site and we say they've excavated, they've poured the basement slab, etc., and we write a report to the bank saying, of that $105 million construction cost, they've now done 10% of that, and the bank releases 10% of the construction cost to the developer, who then releases to the builder, hopefully, and then hopefully to the subcontractors. So that's one part. That's the main.
So, and you obviously get on the bank's panel, and you go and schmooze all the banks and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, you know what we used to. It's a lot harder these days, to be honest, because there's not as much development.
No,
in Melbourne there is, but in Sydney, you know, there's one crane in the sky in CBD other than Barangaroo. So there's not as, and the panels are all dried up. There were used to be Suncorp, Capital. There used to be a lot more lenders in that field. Really now there's a big four.
Yeah.
And so if you're not on those panels, you don't even work.
Hmm.
Because that used to be so much more competition, but they're not lending as much on those development sites.
Yeah.
Because they look at the cost of where can they put funds safer, blah, blah, blah. And the restrictions to get funding are so much greater.
Mm.
That's a good thing for supply if you're worried about oversupply in Sydney. The fact that developers need 50% pre-sales, far more equity to get the project going is a good thing in one way.
Mm-hmm. So you have offices at Washington Brown all around Australia?
Yep.
And you physically go and look at the properties to do
Do the depreciation, that's right. So we physically, or most of the properties that we do are tenanted.
Yep.
So a lot of clients have the concern, oh, how are you going to get in? Well, you've got a property manager. We don't want you to be the middle person because we don't want you ringing me. So we just say, give us property manager the details. Generally, the property manager will give us the tenant details because they don't want to be the middle person either.
No.
So generally, we ring up the tenant saying, we're going to suit you. Often it's the morning. Night, Saturdays, unfortunately, sometimes, and we go out and inspect the property.
Okay, and if I was going out there to build a little, little house of some description, and I was getting construction finance on it, you'd be involved in that process as well for drawdowns, or no?
No, not for a house. It would be too small. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that because I'm trying to big note myself. But
what
happens is the banks only to use someone like us. Generally, if it's $1 million construction minimum.
Yep.
So normally someone like those drawdowns, either a local valuer would do it. In the old days, the bank manager did it.
Hmm.
Because their risk of a $100,000 construction cost, if it goes pear-shaped, it's not as big. It's when it starts getting riskier.
Yeah.
And there's levels as well. So we're not the biggest firm in the country. So we might be approved from a $1 million to a $20 million build. Then from $100 million, there's like the top, like the top of accounting. So there's certain levels that you get to as well.
Okay, very good. Hmm. All right, so if you were to give a piece of advice to investors out there, you know, your best hot tips, what would they be?
My best hot tip? Well, my first tip, obviously, is to get a depreciation schedule on any property, regardless of the age.
Yep.
So we are often surprising clients on the upside of what they can claim on older property, whether it be renovated, even if it's old. So that would be always my number one tip. in terms of purchasing, in terms of buying a property, my tips would be to consider what the construction costs are on the property as well. So if you have, you know, access to things like RP data and Australian property monitors, etc., a tip there would be that if you look at the first sale on a property and it was $150,000, my tip here would be that if you could buy that property at $150,000, it'd be hard to lose money. And that might be 10 years old, that property, right? So if you can buy it at the first sale price, which happens, as I showed you today, hard to lose money.
Very good. So what about costs? What does it cost to get you guys out on site to do a...
Depends where it is, but roughly between...
Building inspection.
Depreciation. For capital cities, it depends, about $600 to $700, depending on the property. But obviously commercial, you're talking industrial, we just work for Lendlease. And we did, you know, $400 million bills of that stuff, so that's a different fee scale. But generally a residential property in a capital city, and most regional places, it's between $600 to $700.
Okay. And how many guys you got on the ground, guys and girls?
Well, there's about 30 in my head office in Sydney, then we've got about 60 nationwide.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Pretty big.
Across the thing.
It's a lot of mouths to feed.
So you're pleased you bought the company and did the Remington Steel?
Yes. In some ways I look back and it's, A, because it's always been my baby. And I've been pretty passionate about it.
You must have been if you wrote a thesis in your 20s about depreciation. Oh, my God.
I know. But I do sometimes, you know, you'd look at your remedies and go, I wouldn't know what it's like to work for anyone else, do you?
True.
You know?
You become unemployable, actually.
Yeah, I reckon I am. I'd be a nightmare.
I reckon I'm unemployable.
I imagine someone trying to tell me what to do. Anyway, not going to happen. Not in this lifetime, anyway.
Very good, Tyron. Well, look, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And remember, everybody, it's Washington Brown. How do we get in touch with you?
Well, the best way would go to the website, www.washingtonbrown.com.au. All the contact
details.
Actually,
on the website, you've got some really cool tools. Let's talk about them. What's that?
Well, we've got lots of tools, actually. We've got a free depreciation calculator.
Yep.
So you can work out what the instant estimate of a depreciation claim is at any time on any property. We've got a free building cost calculator. So if you were developing 50 units, we've developed a building construction cost calculator so you can get a free estimate of how much it's going to cost you to build those 50 units nationwide. We've got a depreciation app, which you can download on the iTunes and the Android store.
It's an app for everything.
App for everything these days. But you know what? It's surprising that I don't know, we've had something like 20,000 downloads in a year. It surprised me.
Good.
Yeah, it's free, that's why.
Well, you must get a heap after when you do a bit of a talk like this.
Well, I did get a spike.
You see everybody, you're up there on stage, everybody's going, oh, download that.
I know. there was actually a spike last week. That's good. Yeah, good. So it's washingtonbrown.com.au. It's been fun.
Very good. Washingtonbrown.com.au. Jump on there, get your app, get your calculator, get your things going on.
Good on you.
And as I said, get in there and get your depreciations done on an older building because of the extensions and renovations and all the rest of it. If you're going to rip something out, get them in before if you haven't already and after so that you can maximise that write-off of the change, whether it be kitchen, bathroom, extension, whatever. And for larger construction, I've just had my quantity surveyors come in and give me the report for the download on the next drawdown of one of the ones I'm doing at the moment, actually.
All right, okay.
It's all good.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's good.
All good. Well, thank you very much, Tyron. WashingtonBrown.com.au. Jump on there, guys, and we'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon with a completely different topic. So bye for now, guys, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.